Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Thursday morning. It's Thursday, February 25th. Good to be with you. And we have a lot to talk about this morning, so much so that we are not going to be doing a complete news segment off the top of the hour. Instead, we're going to, in just about 3 minutes, bring up Monsignor Charles Pope, who wrote a powerful piece in the Register just recently this week. Congress is about to vote on the Equality Act, a grave threat to religious liberty. Please take action now. So this was posted on the 22nd. Well, in the news this morning, and that is my lead story basically in the newscast, which of course I won't have time to do because there's so much to talk about with Monsignor, but let me just read you this one headline. The so-called Equality Act, which is up for a vote in the House today, is strongly opposed by the U.S. Bishops' Conference. The measure was introduced in the House last week. The bill would recognize sexual orientation and gender identity as protected legal classes. Now, this also means gender fluidity. So if 1 month someone is a girl, wants to identify as a boy, and just the opposite, and then the next month they want to do, you know, they want to be a boy, be a girl, back and forth, we're supposed to be able to allow all of this to just go on. How in the world is that possible? Not to mention the damage it does to the person spiritually and physically, but the bill would recognize sexual orientation and gender identity and protected legal classes in a variety of areas, including housing, education, and public spaces. Critics have warned that it would erode religious freedom and enshrine the redefinition of marriage and gender ideology in law, requiring people and groups to confirm LGBTQ equality and transgender ideology, regardless of religious beliefs. So Monsignor Pope was on with us. We're going to get to that in a second. Then we're going to be talking with another wonderful priest, dear friend of mine from the Archdiocese of Detroit, a regular contributor to Catholic World Report and other publications. Father Charlie Fox has written a beautiful piece about It's the Mass That Matters. And he's looking back at the history of the church, particularly in England and Ireland under great persecution, and what the Mass meant, and comparing it to what many of us are concerned about now. So we'll talk with Father Charlie Fox, and wrapping up a busy Thursday morning with Grace Williams. She's a founder and executive director of Children of the Immaculate Heart. If you remember, 2 weeks ago, we had the wonderful legal experts from the Thomas More Society on with us talking about this beautiful ministry. And this ministry, Children of the Immaculate Heart, is dedicated to helping women who are victims of sex trafficking in Southern California, which is a big hot spot for this problem, as you can imagine. Now, they were trying to expand, and basically their program was put in limbo because those in the local government thought it was, quote unquote, too religious. I'm kind of, you know, summarizing this whole thing. And thanks be to God, the folks from the Thomas More Law Society came in and made a difference and enabled them to open up and expand. What was so frustrating to me when we were doing the interview a few weeks ago was that the same government officials who were against the expansion didn't have any other alternatives. It's like you're sitting there saying, well, no, we're going to shut you down because we think you're too religious. And I'm summarizing, you know, their reasoning, their legal definition of the situation. But then we're not going to offer any alternatives, and we're still going to claim that we're really concerned about this problem. It's just ridiculous. But this all ties into the attacks on religion and faith. And that's where we bring up our dear friend, Monsignor Charles Pope from the Register, the Archdiocese of D.C. Monsignor, thanks for joining us. A great blog, and it looks like it's coming up for a vote today, the so-called Equality Act. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I wish it were a better morning, but yes, good morning.
Yeah. All right, so your thoughts going into this day. This is really, really scary.
It is, you know, and you know what makes it so scary is that it's all based on a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Especially this transgender stuff. I mean, there's no such thing. You know, you're male or you're female. You know, so we're to that, you know, George Orwell novel, 2 + 2 = 5. And if you don't agree with what the government says, by God, you're guilty of a thought crime and you're going to pay. And you will comply. And what I find most alarming is that, according to the bishops, by the way, let's praise our bishops here. Mm-hmm. You know, we often say, well, they don't talk enough about, but both last year and this year, when this thing, you know, came up last year as well, And they're very outspoken about it. And I think that's very, very important that we should acknowledge that. But it exempts itself from the Religious Freedom Act. You need to find the exact place here in the bishop's... It explicitly exempts itself from the Bipartisan Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993.
Mm-hmm.
This is an unprecedented move, and the Equality Act represents an explicit departure from one of the founding principles, namely the freedom of religion. And, the bishops also say, we treasure the First Amendment freedoms of speech and of freedom of association and of conscience and religious liberty. And the Equality Act puts these at risk by requiring uniform assent to the new beliefs about human identity. You know, they're literally the cultural left is literally trying to redefine human nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're all supposed to go along and just smile, and not just smile, but actively support
and promote it,
mm-hmm.
and encourage pay for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Because my understanding is what can happen as well, and Bill Donahue had a powerful piece that I also posted in addition to your article, mm-hmm. talking about the fact that they want people to pay for, if people want to have the so-called, transitioning surgery, to pay for the drugs and for the actual surgery with their tax dollars.
Exactly. So, this is, it's if it wasn't, it's so bold, and the left, of course, has become very bold. They just really don't care what people think. They're going to do what they will. It's scary.
So what do we do? What is our responsibility here, Monsignor, do you think?
Well, on my own blog, and I, there's a place you can go and, express your own views to your congressional representatives. I don't know how it all works out, how it goes through the House, and then does it go to the Senate, and do they have the votes, but we have to speak out. And there's a little link on my bottom of my blog, and both at the Register, and my own blog. It's called Action Center, and it has a site to help you to contact your congressman or senator, and indicate your concern about this. That's one thing to do, but again, I think we have to continue to speak out very, very loudly, and our bishops are going to have to become much more. More than issuing a statement, I think there's going to have to be a news conference. Some way they get on the news and. But the saddest thing is a lot of the stuff, Teresa. If mm-hmm. they've got the votes, there's not much we can do.
Right, right.
And hopefully we'll see you in court. But we tend to win those religious liberty cases as of now. But the Supreme Court's direction, despite all the thoughts about. New justices and so on, the Supreme Court's been a little wishy-washy about a lot of stuff.
Well, I think what's also very frustrating for Catholics who are trying to do their best to live up to their faith is when all of this and these executive orders are coming out from an administration that is led by someone who's calling himself a devout Catholic. And so you have that confusion and you have that frustration. And then you're it's a lie, and you're not giving the full information about the impact that this has on the dignity of the human person. The part of the statement that you have in your article that I think is very good from the bishops, those experiencing gender dysphoria or incongruence must be treated with care and compassion and should receive from healthcare professionals the same quality of services and moral protection from harm that is due to everyone. The Equality Act, however, would force many healthcare professionals to perform certain treatments and procedures associated with gender transition against their best medical or ethical judgment with respect to a patient. And then this is interesting. They go back to something that occurred under the Obama administration. They say the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services under the Obama administration noted in 2016, gender affirmation has not been associated with greater long-term happiness. Tragically, related surgeries may exacerbate the long-term rate of suicide among those identifying as transgender.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not being given, just like abortion, just like birth mm-hmm. control, just like sexual promiscuity, it's all supposed to be wonderful, it's all supposed to be free, and we make our choices, but the fallout is never out there in front of people.
No, because the problem's inside, not outside. Happiness is an inside job, and we can't... go up against what God has set forth and think we're going to be happy? I mean, there's all these ways we could answer it, but at the end of the day, and here, I mean, don't even get me started about these medical quote professionals who are willing to put children on all kinds of hormonal medicines and even do surgeries and so on. Unbelievable. We would never let children make decisions about even far more, far less important things. You know, it's just, we've taken leave of our senses.
Right.
It's one thing that some parents behave like, idiots or whatever, but it's one thing if a person, they deserve our, as it says, our sympathy and our care if there's some gender dysphoria going on. A lot of kids go through crazy stuff,
Right.
But at the end of the day, they deserve our help, not to go along with a lie.
Well, there is some bright spots out there. For example, I don't know if you're familiar, there's a so-called research center out in Great Britain, where many of the people who work at this so-called clinic, where they're supposed to be very affirming for children who are, struggling with their gender identity, they're supposed to be bringing them in. They do psychological testing, and then they see if they should be, they're very pro, transitioning. But the people who are working there, many have resigned and have spoken up, and there was actually a documentary that was done, because these people are realizing that it's nothing but agenda-driven, and that they barely even question these young kids, as you said. These are babies basically going in and saying, well, I feel this way or I feel that way. And right away, they're put on this very strong and damaging type of, I don't want to say medication, but this routine where they're taking these drugs that can cause so much damage. And these people are coming out and saying, this is child abuse. Mm-hmm. So there was this documentary, but now these people are getting great backlash. So you can't put the truth out there without expecting your head to at least be chopped off or at least attempted.
Yeah, and of course, they're even, pardon the expression, but amputating young girls' breasts and just unbelievable, How have we gotten this dark? Well, I know how, but part of it is when good people stay silent and just say, well, none of my business. But in the end, it ends up being all of our business, and they want our money for it.
Yeah. I think your advice in the article is very good, and you lay it out very clearly as to what is happening, and the vote comes up today. Your article was posted on the 22nd on the Register website, ncregister.com, and we have it on my Facebook page. We'll put another link on the summary section of the archives. But you also put out clearly what the U.S. bishops are saying in terms of their statement and what's happening here. We need to contact our legislative officials, starting today with the House, because it's going up for a vote in the House today, and then expected to go to the Senate. My understanding is, Monsignor, they do have a great deal of pushback right now from the Senate, so hopefully we can then take our concerns there. In the meantime, I think we have to be the first reading today. I love Esther. Esther, I just love her. And she just goes before the Lord, and she just puts it all out there.
That's it.
So, anyway.
Yes, indeed.
All right, my friend. Great job. Okay. Thank you so much, Monsignor Charles Pope from the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., also from EWTN and the National Catholic Register. Check out his blog. I believe it's still posted. We have it up on my Facebook page, and we'll put it in our archive section as well. Congress is about to vote on the quote-unquote Equality Act, a grave threat to religious liberty. Please take action now. So first and foremost, pray, and then pick up the phone, get online, and contact your representative. We'll be right back.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. If you're facing uncertainty with your current healthcare plan, now is the time to join CMF Curo. You can join any time during the year, and CMF Curo offers flexible Catholic healthcare solutions for individuals, families, and employers. CMF Curo is your personal healthcare advocate. Contact them today at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Why do we need Catholic radio? Because not everybody's sitting in front of a computer or watching their television set at home. How about when driving to work? Catholic radio's there for you. I may be a Catholic priest, but I'm still a student of the faith, and Catholic radio helps supply good material, whether it be a question and answer format show, whether it be a show itself on doctrine or theology, I myself, as a priest, am always learning.
Father Wade thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. 15 minutes past the hour. Do not despair. The Lord is very much still in charge and very large, as I like to say. We have the Mass. Let's never forget that. Beautiful article from my friend, Father Charlie Fox. He's with Sacred Heart Major Seminary in the Archdiocese of Detroit, and he is a regular contributor to a number of Catholic publications, including Catholic World Report, DetroitCatholic.com. Beautiful article, Father, on It's the Mass. And I love the way you go to your own roots, your Irish roots, and your visit to Ireland, and looking back at the history of what it was like for people when they were persecuted and had a hard time being able to have access to the sacraments. And then you do an analogy with what's going on today. So what was moving you when you sat down to write this article? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Teresa. Especially, you just had Monsignor Pope. I thought to myself, boy, you should just have him on for another segment. I feel like I'm not worthy. But it's great to be with you. I wrote the article because the Mass is the source and summit of the Christian life, and yet it is precisely the thing we have been denied during this COVID time, or at least it's been restricted to such an extent that many people have not had regular access to the sacrament. And so I just thought it was really important to become clear about how central it is in our lives. Especially, you know, there's just a whole range of, you know, approaches to dealing with COVID pastorally. For example, live streaming masses, which I think is wonderful as a devotional practice. But it's just worth reminding people that it's the Mass itself that matters. Participating in it online is certainly a good spiritual practice, but it doesn't replace being right there, if mm-hmm. it's possible to be there.
Yeah. The question you also probably have obviously been asked based on the article is getting people back to Mass, because there's been a great concern that, gosh, we're doing this. Are people getting way too comfortable with watching Mass online?
They undoubtedly are. I mean, it is comfortable, so we shouldn't be surprised by that or scandalized. It's just part of human nature to say it's more comfortable to be in your jammies at home than to, you know, dress up and go to church. Fortunately, Catholics are smart enough to know that life is not about comfort. Comfort is a nice blessing when we get it, but that's not what life is about at its essence. Life is about striving. Life is about becoming like Christ, following him, taking up our crosses and following him. And the Mass is the place where the cross of Christ is represented to us, presented once again in sacramental form. There's nothing more important we can do than that. And so I just wanted to write an article to remind myself, because we all need reminders, and remind my readers that, you know, as the title says, it's the Mass that matters.
Mm-hmm. Take us back to what you learned when you went overseas to Ireland. And then I know that you love also English history for the Catholic Church, and you brought that up as well in the piece.
I do, although, yeah, my Irish relatives might, or my Irish ancestors might struggle a little bit with my love of English history, but there's really, there are powerful stories of self-sacrificial devotion in both countries that we would do well to pay attention to, because there are lots of parallels with our situation today as Catholics and the kind of religious persecution that you're talking about on your show so often. In Ireland, I was visiting the home town of some of my relatives, my great-grandparents, and I was able to see the church, for example, where my great-grandmother was baptized and received her first Holy Communion.
Mm.
in that church, I believe it was that church or else another one in the same town. This was back in the year 2000, so it's been 20 years. In the back of the church, there was this kind of large wheelbarrow shaped structure that was basically a mini chapel that the people of the town would wheel down to the seaside in order to have mass secretly, because at that time the Protestant English government would have taken away the food vouchers of the Irish people for celebrating mass.
Wow.
And so they had to do it at night in secret, covertly. And they would whisper the prayers, and the priest would get up into this, again, kind of a flatbed, wheelbarrow-type structure, and celebrate Mass with the people gathered around him on the ground outside of the chapel. And it's just a powerful reminder of how much people have sacrificed for what we are tempted to take so lightly.
See, that's the thing, taking things for granted, and I'm hoping that being able to watch it online, although obviously necessary for some people because of their pre-morbidity conditions or whatever, that makes us kind of like, oh, it's no big deal, I can just sit there and have a cup of coffee and, you know, be inspired by a homily and then maybe turn it off after the homily. I mean, that whole attitude of this is something, another mere form of, I don't want to be disrespectful, but something just to watch to, you know, inspire me or entertain me.
Yeah, and to be clear, what I'm doing is guarding against that approach.
Right.
Rather, because I know many people who genuinely could not get to Mass or didn't feel comfortable and watched live stream Masses with great devotion. I mean, they were truly doing all that they could.
Oh, yeah,
to
getting
be
dressed up and everything else
Lord.
And kneeling during the consecration. Absolutely yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, I really applaud all of that and the effort many priests went to do the live streaming, because many of us are technophobes and are not very adept at this sort of thing. So, you know, it stretched all of us. But mm-hmm. it is something meant for those who cannot get to Mass. It does not replace in-person worship. I mean, that's the nature of Catholicism, is that it's tactile, it's sensible, you know, not meaning sensible mentally, although that's true, but it appeals to all of our senses of
right.
sight and sound and touch. And, you know, we need to be present. And that's something very foreign to our digital age. You know, the need to for bodily presence at an event. But it's really essential to our faith.
You know, the Catholic faith, they always say, is such a physical faith and spiritual, because it encompasses both our souls and our bodies. We're not just, you know, souls floating around. The body is very important. We have theology of the body. Jesus, right, walked the earth. Physically, he felt a lot of what we felt in terms of suffering and pain and loneliness. So the body and the fact that we're designed in the image and likeness of God, that's very, very important. And why the Catholic faith to me is so beautiful is because, as you said, it encompasses all the senses.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the this-ness of the gospel, you know, that God is here, that this is God present and active. You know, when we celebrate the Holy Eucharist, the priest says, this is my body. And so you don't just have to say sort of like, I feel God in a vague way. You see God. You know, this is the body of Christ. And that reality, you know, knowing in the concrete that God truly is Emmanuel, God among us, that he's making good on his promise to stay with us till the end of the age, made in Matthew 28. That's the solidity of the Catholic faith. It's not just a spirituality. It's our life in Christ, and it's about our entire lives.
Let me share just a few of the lines, Father, from your beautiful article before we take a break. Today, in an age when many people are tempted to prefer flashy church services with very obvious emotional outreach, now is a good time for us to see with fresh eyes the beauty and the genius of the Mass, in which the most powerful mysteries of God are communicated to mere mortals by means of a ritual beautiful enough to be fittingly celebrated in the majesty of St. Peter's Basilica, but also simple enough to be celebrated in a wooden chapel mounted on a wheelbarrow, which you just mentioned, on the beaches of Ireland. A ritual grand enough to be celebrated by hundreds of thousands of people at every World Youth Day, but also brief enough to be memorized so that devout priests could write the prayers down from memory and celebrate with only a few huddled prisoners in a Soviet labor camp. This is another story you share in this article. A ritual contemporary enough to be celebrated in each of our parishes in situations normally free of any palpable tension, but also traditional enough that we do in substance the very same thing we've done 2,000 years ago by our Lord on that night of unspeakable tension when he would be betrayed by one of his best friends the night before he would die for us. That's really, really powerful. And I think it makes us, wow, if this doesn't, what we've been going through, if this doesn't wake us up, Father, in terms of what we have, how precious our faith is, I don't know what does. There's an article, I don't know if you saw it, but I posted it on my Facebook page this morning from Church Pop, about a priest, I'm not sure where the priest is from, but who broke down during the Mass because he felt the Lord speaking to him about the pain Jesus feels when we don't take the Eucharist seriously. More with Father Charlie Fox. Check out his latest article. It's excellent. It's at the Catholic World Report homepage, and we'll also post it on the it's on my Facebook page. We'll post it on our links as well. It's The Mass That Matters by Father Charles Fox. More with Father Charles up next.
Does unity in the Church eliminate diversity? No, says the Catholic Catechism. From the beginning, the Catholic Church has been marked by great diversity. Diversity in God's gifts. Diversity in the multiplicity of cultures and people who are its members. There is even diversity in its particular churches who maintain their own traditions. The Catechism asserts this is not a threat to the Church's unity. Sin, however, and its consequences are a constant threat to unity. The number one bond of unity is charity, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. There are also visible bonds of unity, profession of one faith, common celebration of divine worship, especially the sacraments and apostolic succession through the sacrament of holy orders. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
What's the definition of frustration? Frustration is the difference between the way it is and the way you want it to be. It's hard to change the way it is. The way it is sometimes is other people, life, circumstances. The way you want it to be is in your power to change. You can close the gap between reality and what you want. The smaller that gap, the less your frustration. It is always easier to change oneself than to change reality. Frustration isn't always what happens out there. It is how we look at what happens out there.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. Having a wonderful conversation with a gifted priest in our Archdiocese of Detroit, teaches at Sacred Heart Major Seminary. It's The Mass That Matters. And as COVID restrictions loosen their grip on the Church, the life and death urgency of the Mass comes into clearer view. Posted on the Catholic World Report by Father Charles Fox, again from Sacred Heart Major Seminary. Father, you mention in this article, it's really a powerful image of suffering and what it means to really sacrifice for the Lord. You talk about Father Sizek and the book With God in Russia. Explain.
The book With God in Russia was a sort of a spiritual autobiography written by Father Walter Chizik, who was a Jesuit priest imprisoned for, I believe, 20 years in a Soviet labor camp or a series of camps. And it's really the story of his perseverance in the faith and his best efforts to exercise priestly ministry under the most difficult conditions imaginable. And his devotion to the Mass is truly tremendous. I mean, you know, he would once in a while be able to obtain just a little bit of wine and just a one small host and celebrate Mass by memory with that. And he would, you know, make the vessels himself, the chalice and the paten, out of whatever he could find. and, you know, gather up the Catholic prisoners he knew of, and they would have a very quiet, secret mass. And to hear him describe it is to know the power of the mass at a time when so many people would be tempted to abandon God. So that's the power of his witness.
I wonder, we need to hear more stories like this, because I think, and I know too often, I know I've taken my faith for granted. And when things get tough, then we realize, wow, this could really be taken away from us. I mean, if we look at what's going on now in terms of the attacks, it's been only a month with this new administration, and not to get into too much politics, but you look at all the shots across the bow that have happened. And what's next? We now have some senators in Washington who are saying that certain conservative news sites need to be shut down. They're going after their operators, their owners, and saying, why are you allowing these people to be on the air? Because they disagree with what they believe, these senators. And so they're basically just tossing the First Amendment aside. But with that comes, of course, another possible attack on religious freedom. So what do we need to do, Father, do you think, in appreciating the Mass more?
We need to become saints, which is a really terrible answer, because it's going to be so hard. You know, if I had a bunch of strategic answers that sounded slick and were relatively easy to implement, that would make us all feel more comfortable, but it wouldn't be true. You know, what we need is to grow holier. We need to grow closer to the Lord ourselves so that we have the kind of faith that animated lives like Father Chizik's. The faith of those Irish people huddled on the beach, the faith of the English martyrs, the faith of people right now throughout the world who are being persecuted violently for their Catholic faith. Scripture tells us very clearly, in a time of peace and plenty, you need to prepare for a time of difficulty and deprivation. And that's what we ought to be doing now. We still have relative peace, relative plenty, and that's great, and may it continue. But we need to prepare ourselves for a time when that might not be the case, because we all share the same human nature. And mm-hmm. So if persecution can happen anywhere or at any time, then it could happen here. And that's not to be alarmist. It's simply to be realistic. It might not happen, but it's the duty of every Catholic to have the kind of faith that the martyrs have.
I think it's already happening. I mean, we saw what happened with Catholic World Report. I mean, and you write for them in terms of them getting knocked off of Twitter for a while because they actually described someone who identified a man who identified as a woman, as opposed to calling him, quote unquote, transgender. And it was the language that they used. They said that was hateful. So that's why they took them off of Twitter. And there are so many efforts. And then there is Ryan Anderson's book that was removed this week. The book's been out for 3 years, Father, and they remove his book on When Harry Became Sally from Amazon. Now, it's been out for 3 weeks. It's a bestseller. All of a sudden, it's gone the same week that the Equality Act is coming up. So I think in many ways, the discrimination is happening. And I'm concerned. I'm hearing from a lot of people who, and I understand the frustration, but are so discouraged that they're backing down and they're giving in, saying, I had one woman say, it's over, it's done. And I said, what are you talking about? What's over and done? We're still here. Are you still breathing? Did you still get up this morning? Then God is not through with you yet. So I'm frustrated with this attitude of giving up. I mean, we get frustrated, we get scared, I know, but we can't give up and we can't give in.
You should do it. Well, you kind of have a first thing in the morning podcast, your show. Mm-hmm. But that would be a great thing for Catholics to wake up to every day, a Teresa Tomeo pep talk. because you're right. As long as you're breathing, you got to keep fighting. I mean, we are we're supposed to be the church engaged in spiritual battle.
Right.
As long as we're here on earth against the forces of evil, which sounds like superhero movie language, but it was really our language long before the concept of the superhero even came into existence. And we need to be, we cannot sit on the sidelines. You know, the Archbishop Bignaron here in Detroit often says that there are no bystanders
right.
in the work of evangelization. Well, a big measure of the work of evangelization is engaging in spiritual combat, because there are evil forces in the world. And I think increasingly everybody recognizes that. They might not agree on which forces are the evil ones, but I think, you know, people are seeing more and more that ours is a fallen nature and that there is an attraction to evil that seems to be abroad that isn't explainable simply by people's, you know, fallen nature, that there mm-hmm. are principalities and powers, as St. Paul says, working to corrupt us. And we have Christ, so we can be totally confident, but we need to live in union with him and to share his gospel with other people in order to conquer. But when we do that, we can be sure of conquering, and that's the beauty of our faith.
Right.
It's not
right.
like we're making a bet. We know that the victory is ours because the victory is already Christ's.
You sound like the wonderful fellow coworker of yours at Sacred Heart Major Seminary, Dr. Robert Festigi, who spoke last night at Divine Child. Deacon Dom and I watched his talk on St. Joseph, and it was great, and he took some questions at the end, and he says, all these people think that we're giving up. He says, what? Yes, we're in a crisis. There's a crisis going on in the world. We have problems in the church, but this isn't the first time we've been through this. I mean, his hands were going because he's very Italian, as you know, and very emotional, but it was a beautiful talk. It was the same thing. We have Jesus, and as Catholics, we have him in the Eucharist.
Just for the record, I've never known anyone who was a little Italian. So the only Italians I know are very Italian. Dr. Festigi is wonderful. Maybe
yes.
I'm sort of like his slow-witted younger brother. But absolutely. I mean, we need to become revitalized in our faith. And this is part of, you know, the whole thing about, like, how many Catholics will return to Mass. We shouldn't ask that question in a kind of hand-wringing, anxious sort of way. We should ask with the confidence that says, this is the source of life, and this is what God has given us for our salvation. And so we can have total confidence that
yep.
we need the Mass.
And then we can also invite someone to Mass, right? As Archbishop Ignorant talks about in this
sure.
encounter with Christ and helping people have that encounter through Unleash the Gospel. Father, great discussion. Thank you so much. Terrific article again. Father Charlie Fox, an article featured in Catholic World Report. It's the Mass that matters. We'll be right back.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I'm operating on the gifts of the Holy Spirit when I don't feel well, even when I'm annoyed, when I'm down and out. During my recovery from an automobile accident, immense numbers of people wrote to me and sent me emails, 50,000, and they told me how helpful they thought my talks on EWTN were to them. I'm delighted, but I want you to know I'm nobody's fool. The talks that were helpful, the sentences that were helpful, the phrases that were helpful came from the Holy Spirit. That's the work of the Holy Spirit. And the Styrofoam packaging came from me. I did that. And Styrofoam doesn't amount to very much.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pagua.
Within the people of life and the people for life, that's who we are, the people of life and the people for life, part of our self-identity. The family has a decisive responsibility. This responsibility flows from its very nature as a community of life and love, founded upon marriage and from its mission to guard, reveal, and communicate love. The family and marriage has a mission to guard love, to protect it from false forms of love, from false uses of people, using people and abusing them. It also is to reveal love and communicate love. This is part of the family's and marriage's purpose. You reveal love to the world. You know, people say, oh, marriage is just a piece of paper. That's baloney. This is you saying to the public, I'm loving my wife and my husband and my children till death do us part.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
A light shines in the darkness, and the darkness shall not overcome it. Never forget that. Grace Williams knows all about this. She's a founder and executive director of Children of the Immaculate Heart. A few weeks ago, right on this very program, we spoke with the wonderful attorneys from the Thomas More Society. And they were helping Grace and those who run this wonderful program, Children of the Immaculate Heart, to make sure that they were able to open up a prime location that had been postponed because some administrators in the area, officials, government officials, felt that, and I'm summarizing this very quickly for sake of time, felt that it was, you know, too religious. Well, thanks be to God, they persevered, and they have this wonderful ministry that is working to come up against this huge problem of sex trafficking. So, Grace, good morning. Thanks for joining us. First of all, tell us a little bit about the Children of the Immaculate Heart.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for having me. Children of the Immaculate Heart was founded in 2013 to serve survivors of sex trafficking. We're exclusively here in San Diego, in Southern California, and we have two programs. One is for women over the age of 18 who have children who are trying to get out of this life, and we started that because most programs wouldn't take women with kids. There's kind of a pro-life way to approach the issue. And then we have our newest program, which you're speaking of right now, which is called The Refuge, which is a licensed California residential treatment facility for 12 to 17-year-old girls who are foster youth who were then trafficked, or kids who are on probation who have been trafficked. So those are the two programs, and both have housing therapy, opportunities for education, group therapy, and just in general assistance with kind of basic needs. So, that's what we do.
So why is that location so crucial for this type of ministry?
Location as far as where we are?
Terms of being in Southern California and San Diego.
Yeah. San Diego is, according to the FBI, the ninth worst city in the country for child sex trafficking. So it's a big problem here, a big problem in Southern California in general. Most big cities, it's a problem. But I think in God's providence, he just led me here when I was feeling called to start this. And there is a good collaboration here among service providers and government and non-government agencies working to prosecute trafficking, to serve survivors, etc. So I was able to learn a lot and get plugged in a lot here. But the need is unfortunately quite prevalent throughout our country.
Now, in terms of how the clients learn about you and come to you for help and service, how does that work? How do you find out about them? Are you led to them? Do they come to you? Do they hear about you?
Yeah, it's a combination. For the children's program, they are sent here by their social workers or their probation officer. So why we needed a license, because we wanted to serve kids who are wards of the state, and you have to be a licensed facility in order to take those youth. And that's where the whole lawsuit and everything stemmed out of. And then for the adult program, a lot of it is word of mouth. Women who are in our program referring people they know to us who, you know, old friends from the life and whatnot. Also can be through law enforcement or the district attorney's office. We're also listed with 211, which is kind of a homeless helpline. So someone who calls there and says they're trying to get away from a pimp or something might be a warm transfer directly to us. But it's largely, mostly word of mouth are the ones we actually end up taking.
In terms of sex trafficking, do you think people are getting an understanding of how serious the problem is and how regional it is in various cities? You mentioned you're number 9 in terms of among the worst cities, because there's so much emphasis. Let's say we look at it from, let's say, more of a global perspective with movies like Taken and things happening in the Far East and things like that. What are we seeing? What is it in the local areas? What is sex trafficking in terms of what are we experiencing?
I think people still... Overall, I mean, the education is growing, but I think people are largely unaware of how prevalent it is for American teenage girls to be recruited for this. So, for example, in San Diego, 80% of sex trafficking victims are American-born citizens. Only 20% are coming from other countries. So it's really, I mean, traffickers want a willing, quote-unquote, willing victim. They don't want someone who's going to fight back, run away, have a family who's going to come look for them. So they really prey upon kids who have no family support system or, you know, not a healthy one, and hence why foster youth are so at risk. They can very easily c- kind of disappear, fall between the cracks without anyone. You know, it's different to have a social worker who's going to try to find you than your father who's going to try to find you. And, you know, they look for kids who are so starved for love that, like, for example, a trafficker who was interviewed in a study done here in prison, he said, like, you know, he would go to the mall to recruit kids. And if he saw a girl and said, like, hey, you have a pretty smile, and if she kind of looked down and shifted and was like, no, I don't, he knew, like, that was his girl. But if the same thing happened and she was like, thank you, then he knew that girl wasn't for her because she was confident enough in herself to simply take a compliment. But the girl who needed to hear that stuff, man, he could pour that into her, like, you're beautiful, buy her stuff, whatever, and she just would fall for it completely. And then little by little start to exploit her. And often traffickers, and I've heard this from our clients, was the most stable person in their life, the person who showed up for them the most. So, I mean, it's just, it's easy to manipulate someone so young and so broken.
Well, yeah, if you think about broken families at various levels, if kids feel alone, and you think about the insecurity out there caused by social media, not having enough friends or whatever the case is in terms of, and so they're not feeling pretty enough and not feeling smart enough. Maybe they're a victim of bullying. I mean, I could see it happening with runaways and children in the foster care system, but knowing media influence and knowing how many families are struggling, there's a huge market out there to pick up on girls who are insecure.
Yeah, and in the LA court system, juvenile court system, the number one risk factor for youth who are part of the court system being trafficked is child neglect. We often think of child abuse and sexual abuse, which is the second thing, but actually neglect is the worst because you have this vacuum of a need for love, which we all need. God created us for this, and that's not being filled. And I mean, child neglect on a biological level in your brain has the same effect as trauma. Like, you're not able to attach properly and form proper bonds. And so this person can come in and you get this kind of disordered attachment to a perpetrator, but it's an attachment that every human being psychologically needs. So it's so complex on a psychological level. And hence why we wanted to provide such a high level of care, the highest level of care you can be without being an actual like inpatient medical facility for these kids, to give them really good mental health treatment. You know, and just 24/7 awake staff who are trained to deal with trauma and to just also love on these kids.
Beautiful. We're talking with Grace Williams, the founder and executive director of Children of the Immaculate Heart. What's your website?
It's just childrenoftheimmaculateheart.org. Very simple.
Great. And how did you get involved in this? You mentioned your interest in this and your love for working with these women and young people, but what led you to this type of ministry, Grace?
Yeah, you know, I had actually been pursuing religious life for a number of years, and that hadn't worked out.
Well, it's okay. God had another plan, right?
Yeah. I had health issues and stuff like that. There wasn't, you know, God has to get through to the slow ones among us in really clear ways. a priest friend of mine in Denver was leading a pilgrimage here in Southern California through the missions with a group of young adults back in 2012. And I went, and he was reading a book on trafficking. And actually, when I had been in my undergrad, I had done some volunteer work in British Columbia on the streets in Vancouver with women who were working, working the streets. And so I was familiar with it. I'd seen it firsthand, but it had been way off my radar for years. And he just spoke about his, kind of what he felt as a call within a call, the call to the priesthood to work for and into abortion and trafficking and saw them as interrelated. He said to me once something that a friend of his had said, which is like, abortion kills children's bodies and trafficking kills children's souls.
Wow.
And it's true. So it was really through him and one of his friends, who's actually now just starting this work in Denver, that it was really a call. It's hard to describe these things, but, you know, one, his friend describes, like, I asked, like, why he felt drawn to this. And he said he could really see Jesus crucified in these women, like our Lord was betrayed by one of his closest, right? Which is exactly what happens with these kids. Not only their family betrayal often, but then this man that they trust as their boyfriend betrays them. Sold for money, stripped, beaten, publicly humiliated. And this is a very dangerous life. I mean, we have people, the women and girls in our program have friends who die a lot. I mean, like drugs are involved, gang wars, everything. And so, I mean, to me, that was really the thing of a call, like when you can see our Lord in a person that you're serving. And I just absolutely love it. I mean, it's very much like in the Gospels, you know, our Lord is always being accused of eating with prostitutes and sinners. But human nature is the same. I mean, these kids are so, the kids in particular, the women too, but kids just as kids are more, a little more open and vulnerable. They're just so starved for love that they're so receptive. And, you know, there's plenty of dramas and ups and downs.
Sure.
But it's just such a delight to be able to gain the trust of someone who doesn't trust easily and to be able to kind of love them back to life in a sense, and just provide them tools and hopefully a good path for their future.
Well, gosh, introduce them to you know, Jesus and the greatest love of their lives and the most important.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Grace, God bless you. What a gift you have and what a beautiful website, Children of the Immaculate Heart. ChildrenOfTheirImmaculateHeart.com, So it's just ChildrenOfTheImmaculateHeart.org. And on the homepage, there's actually a pledge drive going on, and there's a concert series, and there's some information on how you can help. And you can also sign up, which I just did, by the way, to pray for the victims of trafficking. So God bless you, and keep
you
up the great work. And thank you for answering the call. And I'm so glad.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You know, I'm so glad that you and the Thomas More Society stood up to the local government and pursued this, because it's just so important what you're doing to be Jesus to these women and children.
We could not have done it without them. So
well, you know what? Good for you and good for them. And then we need to stand up and not back down, because you are making a difference, and we need to be Christ to one another. Grace, thank you so much. Founder and Executive Director of Children of the Immaculate Heart. Again, the website, it's beautiful. Check it out, childrenoftheimmaculateheart.org. 52 minutes past the hour. We have to wrap up the interview. We'll be right back to let you know what's coming up on a Friday morning edition of Catholic Connection.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Evidences for Christianity. Some critics of the New Testament suggest it is filled with the prejudicial opinions of the writers, and not exactly what Christ taught, and therefore not reliable. They claim the stories and teachings were altered to bolster the church's authority. But the most prolific writer of the New Testament distinguished Christ's teachings from his own. Paul's discussion of marriage and celibacy in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 is a perfectly good place for him to pass off his own opinions as those of Christ. But he does just the opposite. Twice, in verses 10 and 12, he writes plainly, "This say I, not the Lord." And that's evidence for the authenticity of Christianity. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
54 minutes past the hour. Thanks so much for tuning in to Catholic Connection on a Thursday morning. Much thanks to Monsignor Pope, Father Charlie Fox, and also Grace Williams from the Children of the Immaculate Heart's beautiful website. Check it out, and they can really use your prayers and your support. ChildrenOfTheImmaculateHeart.org is the website. Coming up tomorrow, the one, the only, Father Leo Petalinghung is going to be with me, and we're going to be talking about the Good News Marriage Cruise. He's actually going to be not only giving talks and celebrating Mass for us on the Good News Cruise next year, which you can find at goodnewscruise.com, by the way. He's also, as you know, since he's a chef, he's going to be doing a cooking class for us, and I'm hoping he'll let me operate as his sous chef. We shall see. But it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll talk about a lot of things with Father Leo tomorrow, but he is going to be one of our keynote speakers, and we don't want you to miss that. And always, always fun and interesting to speak with Doug Keck about the upcoming programming, especially during Lent. So many great things going on with EWTN. I want to leave you with the reading today, the first reading. I love Queen Esther. I just love her courage. I just love the way she just turns it all over to the Lord. And this particular reading reminds us, I know many people are frustrated and we're struggling and we're upset and we feel, you know, punch drunk. But we should not give in and never, ever give up. Queen Esther, seized with mortal anguish, had recourse to the Lord. She lay prostrate upon the ground together with her handmaids from morning until evening and said, God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, blessed are you. Help me, who am alone and have no help but you. For I am taking my life in my hand. As a child, I used to hear from the books of my forefathers that you, O Lord, always free those who are pleasing to you. Now help me, who am alone and have no one but you, O Lord my God. And now come to help me, an orphan, put in my mouth persuasive words in the presence of the lion, and turn his heart to hatred for our enemy, so that he and those who are in league with him may perish. Save us from the hands of our enemies, turn our mourning into gladness, and our sorrows into wholeness. You know the story? If you don't read it, she presents herself to the king, he welcomes her, and the Jewish people are saved. Be not afraid. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.